Well, good afternoon. Yeah, it's fairly. What time is it? Is that the correct time? Yeah, I guess that's the correct time. It's 1400 and. Well, I know what I've got wrong here. It's displaying the wrong. I'll explain what's going on here in a moment if I can here. What's going on with the time? How do I change that quickly? Under pressure like this, I don't know. Let's see. Where do you do? Okay, I'm going to Google it, I guess. I'll Google it. Time format in clock in Monterey. Let's see what's going on here. General. Oh, yeah, system settings. Okay. System settings. System settings. About this Mac? What does it mean, system settings? Apple menu. That's preferences. What are you talking about? General. There it is. Okay, good. I've got it now. Let's see. Now what? Language and region. This is not it. Okay, I'm going to go to Monterey. System preferences. Yep. Oh, I don't want general. Okay, I want language and region. All right, good. Now I'm getting somewhere here. I want to explain to you what's happened, but okay, 24-hour time. There we go. Done. 1431 hours, November 22nd, 2022. Ward Green here, and it's exciting right now. I've got to say this is exciting because I'm now running an entirely new installation of Monterey off an external drive, which I installed yesterday. I was up till 10 o'clock in the morning installing all the different apps after I installed the OS, which the OS only took about an hour or something to install. It was nothing. It was very easy. Once I had freed up the drive and made sure I wasn't going to be erasing anything from the drive I'm using, which is an external NVMe drive. Once I got ready to install, it only took about an hour. But then it took me so many hours trying to figure out how all my apps were to be installed. And did I download? I'm trying to think if I downloaded this app or if I'm using it off the other drive. I'm going to have to download all my apps. I was thinking, yeah, I didn't download it. That's not right. So I've got the ability to do things right now, but I'm running partly off the old installation because the thing about Mac OS is you can run the apps off of from anywhere. Like you can run apps virtually. Now, why are my glasses reflecting so much? They don't normally do that. It doesn't normally look. I mean, they normally reflect a lot, but not like this. What's happening? That's just very odd. I don't like it. I don't like all the reflections. I'm trying to see whether I'm going to get reflections. I'm getting too many reflections. Is it over here, maybe? Oh yeah, I know what it is. You know what it is? Yep. Well, my displays are too bright for one thing. There. It's probably going to improve it. But no, it's not really fixing it completely. But anyway, I hope my eyes are more or less visible here or my glasses are not getting a reflection. That's the main thing I'm worried about right now. Not worried, I'm concerned. That's all. I'm just concerned about getting it. I think this will be better, possibly. Is it? I don't know. Anyway. I'm always sitting in the dark. I've got to figure this out though, because this is the first time I've used. Well, it's the same setup. I'm using the same camera. Everything's the same. It should be the same. The only thing. Oh, I know what it is. I know what it is. Okay. I'm gonna change. I think the back. I've got a different wallpaper. No, maybe that's not it. Yeah, that does affect it. See? That does affect it. Yes, the wallpaper does affect it. So, I think that's it, possibly. And then there's this wallpaper too. So that would make it really dark. Now let's see what we've got. I mean, how do we normally brighten it up? That's not bright enough. So where's the best place to get our reflections from? That's the question. Is it from here? This is Ward Green again, still. I mean, I'm still trying to figure this out. We're going to have to start anyway. I installed the OS, but now I'm going to have to install the apps from download them and then install them. So I don't. But the thing about Mac OS is you can. I've already downloaded and installed OBS, and I also JW Library and my collection calendar for the garbage and all these. I've installed a lot of things, and I'm running my upload program, or my FTP program. I'm running off of its original location. It never occurred to me that the whole purpose of installing to a different location was to create an independent installation, until today, when it did occur to me that I need to create a completely independent installation that will run even if my original installation drive fails, right? So that's what I'm doing right now, is I'm creating an independent installation, but it's not fully complete yet. So I installed all these things, and I made notes, so I can basically cover a little bit of it. But I had to install monitor control so I can control my monitor brightness. I had to install the EQ Mac program, which is a free utility that enables you to control to boost your audio. It enables you to boost your audio, but the version I downloaded at first wasn't working. I had to download the version, the old version that I had from before I got it to work. Now, you might get it to work regardless. In your case, I don't know if you were doing it. If someone else did it, they might get it to work. I had to get. Also, I copied FileZilla, so it's fine. Yeah, I don't have to download it. It's a standalone that I actually. The thing about Mac OS, you can the apps are standalone sometimes. They don't require. Well, they might require extra files. You know, like settings files and things that they create for themselves, but you can delete all that stuff using App Cleaner. If you use App Cleaner, you just drag your program file into the App Cleaner, and it will detect what files are being used by that program and then delete all of them very effortlessly. And it's a free program called App Cleaner. I use it all the time in Mac OS. But I had to get AdGuard. I downloaded that and installed that. I had to get I had problems with EQ Mac, and so once I finally went back to the old version and didn't update, when it asked me to update to the newer version, I said no. Then it worked. So I don't know what's going on with that one. I don't really mind, as long as it works right now. I think I don't need to change it. So, but the thing about EQ Mac is I can boost the volume above 100%, which you can't do if it's not working properly. So, I mean, you need to be able to boost your speakers to whatever volume you need, whatever that is. So 100% is not anywhere near the maximum that your speakers can produce. They can produce, you know, 3-4 times that volume or something, very, very much more. But at least twice as loud they can produce, you know, I mean, something very much louder. So I did all that. Then today I downloaded my OBS, which I'm using to record this, and that took a while to set up this morning or this afternoon. I was up. I actually have been up. What time did I get up? Went to bed at 10, so I got up around 4. So I thought I got up at 4. Wait a minute. It's 5:30. Okay, so the time is wrong. I'm in the wrong time zone, I guess. I'm in the wrong time zone on my clock. Okay, so let's fix that. That must be what's going on here. About this Mac, system preferences. Okay. Let's go into general. No, not general. Language and region. We're in the wrong time zone. No wonder I'm confused. Well, I mean, I'm confused partly because I'm sleep deprived, I guess. Canada, right? Gregorian, 24-hour time. It's not 1,400 hours, though. It's not. It's much later. So what's the time zone? Oh, it's, yeah. Where is it? Okay, here, advanced. No, it doesn't. Oh, dates. Okay, times. Oh, look, long. Let's see. Time zone. It's Pacific time, I think, is what I'm on. Right. So that's wrong. So. Okay. Okay. No. It's strange. It's not easier than this. I can't click on the menu and get. Oh, there it is. Wait. Okay. So. It knows what city I'm in. See. Wait a minute. It's not easy. Okay. Strange. It's very unusual that I can't do that. Date and time. Oh, date and time. Obviously, let's see, date and time, but this is language and region. Oh, I selected language and region. There's a section called date and time somewhere. There it is. Ah, yes, I remember this now. Okay, good. Time zone. Yeah, it's just wrong. Okay, unlock. I have to unlock it, but somehow it got changed. That's very odd. It got altered, so I need to change it. There we go. Now it's correct. 1741 hours. Okay, 2022, November 22nd. 1741 hours, Ward Green here, finally. It looks like we're back in the proper setup that we should be in, as far as time goes. That's good. That's good. It's better than it was. What else can I set here that's going to help me? I mean, I guess I'm always about this brightness. It's close, but if I look at the camera, are there any reflections? I'm trying to see where the reflections come from. Over there, maybe? What if I maximize that? Ah, yes. Well, that changes it. But it makes it very dim. Right. Yeah. Well, if I'm looking at the camera, if I'm looking at the screen over here, it's going to be this way. Maybe we do want some more light coming from that, possibly, than what we have. That's about right, I guess. Anyway, this will be the first broadcast from this particular new installation. And I know I've wasted a lot of time there, but I've been doing this since I began installing it. When was that? I think it was late at night. I started. Oh, yeah. 241. So it's taken until 1741. 15 hours. It's taken me to get to this point where I have the installation up and running with most of my critical apps running. And I got my Windows also. My Safari Windows are restored to their normal places. They just don't have all the tabs created yet, and things like that. You know, I don't need all the same tabs. It's just that I want to have some of the same tabs, maybe, or some things that I, there are some things I do want to recreate, and or have similar. Like I'll need a tab. I have lots of, or multiple, I should say, YouTube tabs open all the time, so I can look at some of the YouTube channels independently and keep them open. or not the channels, but I mean a tab for YouTube that's separate from another tab for YouTube, so I can not just not a tab dedicated to one channel, but a tab wherein I might do certain types of YouTube channels, and another tab where I might keep a favorite video on one tab, for example, that kind of thing. Anyway, there's lots of ways of doing it in no matter what OS you're using, but I'm using Mac OS right now, and I can upgrade to possibly to Ventura. I know it's possible to upgrade to Ventura, so I'm thinking about doing that possibly. So this is a long introduction, but I think we should do our study first to get us back on track and get our head straightened out before we go too far. This is a short psalm, little children, Psalm 52, which I hope you will enjoy with me if you're wanting to do that. To the director, Maskil of David. So we're back to David again. Right? When we looked at 51, it was David also. We were back to David after Psalm. So David does come back to the Psalms after, but we had up until between 42 and 50, we had other writers than David, Asaph, the sons of Korah, and things like that. Now we've got David again, 51, and David in 52 of Psalms. So it's of David when Doeg the Edomite came and proceeded to tell Saul and say to him that David had come to the house of Ahimelech. Let's pray to Jehovah now. Father in heaven, Jehovah, help us. We know that you are the creator, and that there's a big difference between creation, which can happen immediately, and evolution, which happens over time. And that therefore those who believe in evolution, we understand that it causes them to believe that they cannot make instantaneous changes in their lives, whereas creation allows us to believe that we can make instantaneous changes. And that's just something that I realized this morning. Possibly it's occurred to me before, but not quite in this same way. I wanted to mention that, Jehovah, and guide us in our study today in the Psalm 52, in Jesus' name, amen. So, this is Psalm 52. Now, let's see whether it has anything to do with creation in this psalm. Let's just find out, because I don't know that, because I haven't looked at the psalm yet. Not consciously. Why do you make your boast over what is bad, O you mighty one? The loving kindness of God is all day long. Adversities, your tongue schemes up, sharpened like a razor, working deceitfully. You have loved what is bad more than what is good. Falsehood more than speaking righteousness. Selah. You have loved all devouring words, O you deceitful tongue. God himself will also pull you down forever. He will knock you down and tear you away from your tent, and he will certainly root you out of the land of the living ones. Selah. And the righteous ones will see it and will be afraid, and over him they will laugh. Here is the able-bodied man that does not put God as his fortress, but that trusts in the abundance of his riches, that takes shelter in adversities by him. But I shall be like a luxuriant olive tree in God's house. I do trust in the loving kindness of God to time indefinite, even forever. I will laud you to time indefinite, for you have taken action, and I shall hope in your name, because it is good in front of your loyal ones. So the only reference there that could have anything to do with creation that I see there is you have taken action. It's not like evolution, where evolution takes no action. It just allows things to happen randomly. It takes no action at all. It just allows natural selection to occur. God takes action, as we can do. We can create instantaneous change in our lives by taking action. Evolution can't do that. So creation is a superior belief system. It's a superior understanding as regards how we got here. You know, with regard to how things work in the universe, taking action is important. Verse 9. That's why David is going to laud Jehovah to time indefinite. Look at this. He says in verse 8, I shall be like a luxuriant olive tree in God's house. I do trust in the loving kindness of God to time indefinite, even forever. Of course, there again is the loving kindness of God. That's another thing that comes about from the idea of there's a creator. It's not evolution, which has no love at all. It doesn't involve love, but whereas creation involves love, the love of God to create us and to take action. So these things, we see it is true. But there are people who trust in the abundance of their riches in verse 7, right? And then the loving kindness of God is all day long, verse 1. It says it's all day long in verse 1, too. David says he will trust in the loving kindness of God to time indefinite. Let's see what we've got here. I've got the study Bible, but you know what? I had to download these Bibles after I made all the work I've been doing. Everything I've installed, including these, I had to download these Bibles, everything. I had to get it all done. It doesn't take long to do that. But there are a lot of things I had to do in these 15 hours. Many of which caused me some difficulties. There were problems in trying to do it because every time I had a problem, I had to try and remember what did I do when I installed it the last time and what. And for example, when you're installing FileZilla, it will not access your mobile drives unless you go into security and privacy and preferences and change the settings so that it allows FileZilla to access your removable drive or your USB connected drives, whatever. You might not be removable. Any external drives will not be allowed to function in FileZilla unless you give it permission in security within preferences. So that's a quirk that I had not realized, and I had the same problem last time. I'm sure I had the same problem. And you Google it? I Googled it and found the answer immediately. But, I mean, the thing is, I didn't Google it at first, and it cost me time, but wasting time without realizing I needed to Google it. So it took me 15 hours to get from nothing to having a new installation, which is all in all, it's not very bad. It's not too bad, but that included my sleep. I got sleep as well in that time. I got my 6 hours from 10 to 4, 10 to 1600. So I got 6 hours sleep, so 9 hours total. It took me in work 9 hours to completely create a new installation with all the programs. Not all of them, no. I'm sure I don't have all of them. But I wasn't trying to do it in record time. I was just trying to... I wanted to install it, create my new wallpaper, use it. I wanted to use it. I wanted to start using it. First thing I had to do, one of the first things was I had to get connected to the internet. And the first thing I have to do when I connect to the internet, let me turn off my burner if I haven't done that. Have I done it? Oh, yeah. I did it already. Okay. The first thing I have to do, or anyone has to do, is get online. And Mac OS always tries to connect. By now, I'm used to Mac OS, so it doesn't really bother me. But at first, it's a real problem if you don't know what's going on. It always tries to connect using the default IP addresses, which are 10 dot something, whereas I want to use 192.168.something for my addresses, and I want to set it up manually, because when I set it up manually, I know my modem address is 192.168.something, and I know what it is. So I can type in the other two numbers in addition to 192.168, and I can say, you know, first of all, say manual, and then type those numbers in, and then say, you know, apply, and it works. And suddenly I have internet connection. I needed to get internet connected. Once that's connected, then I can say, wow, I can do almost anything now. But initially, I always have to do that. I have to set that up. What's going on here? Let's see if I can scroll, if I can zoom out here. I want to try to zoom this out. Let's do this. Let's try to... yeah. I want to make it smaller, because if I make it smaller, it's going to be easier to keep myself centered. What's wrong with it? Let's see. Hang on. Why is it not working? Let me see. Or why am I? Oh, I know. I think I know. Wait a minute. Hang on a sec. Okay. Drag it over this way. Yeah. No. That's not it. That's not. I'm getting there. There we are. That's better. And then I just have to tip it forward or back. I think that's a better... Yeah, I think that's more the way I had it before. Now, I still need to drag this back and set it up so it works with my setup. Is that it? No. Let's try this. Hang on. That's maybe better. That makes me a little smaller, though. I'm going to show you in a sec. That's what I've got now. But I'm just trying to see. I mean, I can drag these things any way I want. I can drag them like that, a little bigger, and then drag it a little smaller. And then, wait a minute, hang on. Yeah, I mean, sorry about that. Wait a minute, okay. I know how to do this. There we go. There we are. I'm getting there. So I think that's sort of it. And then make it a little bigger. And then I just keep going back and forth. It's sort of a vicious cycle. There we are. Maybe. No. Why is that doing that on me? Oh, I know. Yeah. I need to widen out the right side of it. Let's try that. No, not too bad. Not too bad. But if I want to make it be higher in the frame, I do that. Push the camera forward or back. I could do that, but that's not what I want. I want to be sitting in the frame. Like this. Like that. I think. Basically, something like that. Anyway, that's better, I think. So, the beauty of the advantage, it's a phenomenal advantage to reinstall your OS completely again, because you learn all the things that you did the first time better. You learn it all over again. You understand it better. But I've been waiting, and this is the thing I think that is the topic for today, is that I've been waiting to do this from when I first got my M1 Mac Mini. At that time I purchased these NVMe drives, which are silicon power 2 terabyte drives, and they're recommended by Lon Zeidman, I think his name is. Is it Zeidman? Zeidman, or is it? I can't remember his name. I know his name. Is it Lon Zeidman? Yeah, it's Lon Zeidman. Yeah. He recommended these drives in one of his YouTube videos. I really like the spec of these drives. I like their, you know, their mean time before failure and all the stuff, all the ratings that they had. I thought these are the best drives, so I bought them. I've been using them since, and I've used them for storage, but I installed no OSs on them until just now with the one that I was using as sort of a secondary storage. But I had installed OSs on other SSDs before, and I knew that they ran fast, but I needed a drive that ran faster than a standard SATA SSD, because that's only 6 gigabits per second or something, whatever that is. Is that right? Six. Okay. SATA 3 data rate is... 6 gigabits per second, apparently. course, it can be 3 gigabits per second or six, but they're both in gigabits per second. But it means that it's SATA 3, which is the fastest you can do with SATA. And that, if you divide that out, that's about 5 gigabytes. Is it 5 gigabytes or more? Divide by 8, 7. Well, you never get the full. It's more like 7. Not 700 megabytes is what I mean to say. 700 megabytes per second is what the maximum is, but you never get that. You get more like 500 or something megabytes per second. You can't do a very fast transfer with that. But if I look at NVMe data rate, which I don't even know what it is, but it's comparable to, I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but it's comparable to Thunderbolt. There, it can exceed, the top NVMe SSDs can exceed 3 gigabytes instead of gigabits. So it's like 8 times faster or 4 times faster than SATA 3. Right? 3 gigabytes instead of 6 gigabits. It's fast, you know, very fast. So that's like 75, it says here, some Gen 4 NVMe PCIe SSDs are capable of 7,500 megabytes per second, which is 7.5 gigabytes per second, compared to 6 gigabits per second. So, I mean, it's sort of like 10, you know, is it 8 times faster or something, right? Or 10 times faster? I mean, it's a lot. Yeah, it's something like 8 or 10 times faster than SATA, which is, it's far preferable to run your OS off of a drive like that. Now, mind you, okay, keep in mind, I was running off the internal M1 Max MacBook Pro drive, which is super fast. Well, let's do a speed test. This is a great idea. We're going to do Blackmagic speed test. Do I have Blackmagic? No, I don't. Okay, but I think I can copy Blackmagic from my old drive. I think I can just copy it from my applications. It just, Finder doesn't want to stay the way I want it. It doesn't keep me in the column mode for some reason. There's Blackmagic speed test. Okay, let's copy that. Now I'm going to copy it to my existing installation, see if this will work. The copy works. Now let's see whether the drive works. I'm running Blackmagic. Okay, here it is. Let's bring it over here. So it actually works so far. I'm actually using it. I'm getting better with using my apps, too, because when you reinstall all your apps, when you reinstall your OS, you start to learn more about how to use the OS more efficiently. It just makes things more automatic. You become more confident. We want to select our target drive. So we're going to do a test on this drive here where we've got users. This is my user directory. Let's open that. Do start the speed test. This is my speed. 1,300 megabytes per second is pretty fast in the write speed. Look at 2,700. Why? Good, 2,700. And that, see what we get on pass 2. The write speed is slow, 1,262, but we went up to 2,700. That was phenomenal. We were up to 2,700. That's what I normally get. That's the fastest speed I've ever got with these external drives is 2,700. It's 2.5 gigabytes per second or 2,700 megabytes per second. Read speed. So when it's reading your data, when it's running the OS, it does a lot of reading of data. It's going to be pretty fast, it says here. And it writes pretty fast too, but not, you know, it's more like half as fast for the write speed. Now, just for comparison, let's look at the target drive as our internal MacBook Pro SSD, right? Look at my directory on that internal drive and see how fast that is. 4,000 megabytes. 49, 5,000. That's the difference. 1,300 compared to 4,000. And 2,700 compared to 5,000. So it's twice as fast read. And, you know, three times as fast? Yeah. Twice as fast read and three times as fast write if I run off my internal MacBook Pro SSD, right? That's what this tells us. So I've just shown that right there. So I hope you saw that. Anyway, that's... But that's still, we're still running fast. Like we're just, it's just that the speed it was running at was blindingly fast. And you don't really need to have data transfer speed that fast in order to run an OS, like Mac OS. It's fine. It's fine at the speed I'm running it at. The greater limitation comes in the processing speed of certain things rather than in the read and write. So it's not really a big issue. I could run off a much slower interface and still I'd barely notice any lag. I might notice a little bit, but I'm not noticing any lag right now because it runs just as fast as ever to my eye. I mean, there's no way to detect how much slower it is unless you're transferring a whole ton of data. And to just display a screen is not going to be transferring a lot of data, really. You know, you're just displaying your browser window or something. That's not a lot of data compared to, you know, compared to massive, you know, I suppose gaming or something, which would transfer a lot of graphical data all the time. But I don't even know if that's... Would that make a difference with gaming? Probably it would, but I'm not sure how much. We're still transferring at a blindingly fast rate compared to the older technologies. I just don't think it's going to make, except for cutting edge software, it's not going to make any difference. So for some people, it will make a difference and they'll want to run off their internal drive. But in my case, I get added security by running off the external drive. So for me, that's the preferred mode, and I've been meaning to do that ever since I bought those silicon power drives, the NVMe drives that are external 2 terabyte. I wanted to run off those, just like I did when I got the Mac Mini. I installed off another silicon power drive, which is a slightly smaller drive, a 1 terabyte. That's where I installed Monterey for my M1 Mac Mini, is on the external 1 terabyte silicon power drive, which I can also boot from. On this computer, if I wanted to, I could boot that system with the MacBook Pro. I'm pretty sure it would boot because it's compatible with Apple Silicon. It would boot. So I've got now several systems I can boot. In addition to my old 2011 iMacs, I've got like 4 different operating systems I can boot into. Well, and more, because I've installed other things like Yosemite is another one I can boot into as an installation on one of my external drives. You know, I've got all these different backup systems, which makes me feel a little better because I have these backup systems. We haven't done 32. Look at this. This is a great one. I love Isaiah 32, actually. We just did 31 yesterday about going down to Egypt for assistance. Like Solomon went down and got horses from Egypt, and that's bad to do that because Jehovah said, don't increase horses for yourself very much. Isaiah 32 says, look, a king will reign for righteousness itself. And as respects princes, they will rule as princes for justice itself. And each one must prove to be like a hiding place from the wind and a place of concealment from the rainstorm, like streams of water in a waterless country, like the shadow of a heavy crag in an exhausted land. And the eyes of those seeing will not be pasted together, and the very ears of those hearing will pay attention, and the heart itself of those who are over hasty will consider knowledge, and even the tongue of the stammerers will be quick in speaking clear things. The senseless one will no longer be called generous, and as for the unprincipled man, he will not be said to be noble, because the senseless one himself will speak mere senselessness, and his very heart will work at what is hurtful, to work at apostasy and to speak against Jehovah what is wayward, to cause the soul of the hungry one to go empty, and he causes even the thirsty one to go without drink itself. As for the unprincipled man, his instruments are bad. He himself has given counsel for acts of loose conduct to wreck the afflicted ones with false sayings, even when someone poor speaks what is right. As regards the generous one, it is for generous things that he is given counsel, and in favor of generous things he himself will rise up. You women who are at ease, why is that hard to say? You women who are at ease, rise up, listen to my voice. Maybe it's 6 hours sleep that does that too. You careless daughters, give ear to my saying. Within a year and some days, you careless ones will be agitated because the grape picking will have come to an end, but no fruit gathering will come in. Let me adjust my monitor brightness for this monitor here. It's better. Tremble, you women who are at ease. Be agitated, you careless ones. Undress and make yourselves naked and gird sackcloth upon the loins. Beat yourselves upon the breasts in lamentation over the desirable fields, over the fruit-bearing vine. Upon the ground of my people, merely thorns, spiny bushes come up, for they are upon all the houses of exultation. Yes, the highly elated town. For the dwelling tower itself has been forsaken. The very hubbub of the city has been abandoned. Ophel and the watchtower themselves have become bare fields. For time indefinite, the exultation of zebras, the pasture of droves, until upon us the Spirit is poured out from on high, and the wilderness will have become an orchard, and the orchard itself is accounted as a real forest. And in the wilderness justice will certainly reside, and in the orchard righteousness itself will dwell. And the work of the true righteousness must become peace, and the service of the true righteousness quietness and security to time indefinite. And my people must dwell in a peaceful abiding place and in residences of full confidence and in undisturbed resting places. And it will certainly hail when the forest goes down and the city becomes low in an abased state. Happy are you people who are sowing seed alongside all waters, sending forth the feet of the bull and of the ass. That's the end of Isaiah 32. We notice some interesting things there about generosity and also about the opposite of that, or whatever these people are, who had been called generous, who were actually just maybe careless with their possessions or something, and so they were called generous, but that was not the right description of them. They were actually senseless, and it says. They were called generous maybe because they were generous, but the point is their heart will work, his heart, the senseless one, will work at what is hurtful here, not referring to a particular person, but just referring to the idea of anybody who is senseless, to work at apostasy and to speak against Jehovah what is wayward. They're going to work at apostasy, these senseless people. And the unprincipled man gives counsel for loose conduct and attempts to wreck the afflicted ones with false sayings, even when someone poor, in verse 7, speaks what is right. But the generous one gives counsel for generous things in verse 8. And then it gives some counsel to the women who are at ease. They were to undress and make themselves naked and gird sackcloth upon the loins and beat themselves in lamentation over the desirable fields or the the crop-bearing vegetation, like, for example, the fruit-bearing vine is also mentioned there. Upon the ground of my people, merely thorns come up. Because they are upon all the houses of exaltation. They're not watching at the watchtower. They're just in the city, you know, celebrating and enjoying themselves all the time instead of watching. Being on guard is what it looks like there. The dwelling tower itself has been forsaken. But it even says the very hubbub of the city has been abandoned, which implies that the city became, the cities would become desolate until the wilderness would become an orchard and the orchard would become a forest. And that was verse 15, where Jehovah was prophesying he would make these good things happen. Justice will reside in the wilderness, verse 16. And the work of the true righteousness must become peace, such as we saw in the convention this year. The theme of peace, pursue peace, was the theme. And we're still encountering in our study, even today, this idea of peace once again. And quietness and security is there. So security is important, obviously. It's not, it's just that we don't want to pursue security in a severe manner or an obsessive manner. But in my case, for example, by reinstalling my OS to an external drive, it's giving me a sense of security, just like it did when I had the Mac Mini and I installed to an external drive. But in that case also, it was easier or better for me to install to an external drive because I was having boot problems with the Mac Mini internal drive. It wasn't booting on the first try. It would go maybe five times. So, but whatever works best, you know, is also good for security, too. I mean, it's going to make you feel, if your system works, like I replaced my mouse with a different one yesterday and all my click problems disappeared. If you don't have problems with your equipment, that makes you feel more secure, because then when something really goes wrong, you're not wondering whether it's just your equipment that's going wrong again or whether it's a security issue. You don't have any doubt. It eliminates a lot of doubt. Not all the doubt, but it makes you feel more secure, definitely, when you eliminate some of the doubts. And one of the ways to do that is to make your system work, to get it working or make it work more reliably by finding equipment that is reliable, that works. My mouse wasn't working yesterday, so now I've got another mouse from the same manufacturer, but I've ordered a new mouse because I can't really trust that perhaps this second mouse from that same manufacturer will actually have a similar problem later on. So just to protect myself, I need to get another manufacturer, and maybe I should have multiple manufacturers for my mice. It's a good idea, I think. Because you don't know which one is going to be your favorite or the most reliable. And I believe the favorite in my case, in many people's also, I believe, will be the most reliable. Reliability is very desirable, and it tends to be much appreciated and a favorite thing. I mean, it's the favorite when something works really, really well all the time. I mean, that is something that we don't always realize that that's the case. But if it might look good, it might function well at times, better than other products. But if it doesn't possess reliability, it's not going to be the favorite. It's not going to be very much fun or. It's not even going to be enjoyable to use, right? If it's not reliable, it's more like a nightmare of a situation when your equipment is breaking down all the time or failing, having faults, intermittent faults. I've known about equipment that has intermittent faults. I've seen that for a long time. I've seen these things happen. I had problems when I did my master's thesis. I had problems with my sputtering gun. It wasn't even my gun, but I mean, the one I was using was gotten for the purpose, partly, of my experiment that I was doing. Maybe later it was to be used for something else, but I was using it for my experiment. And it was sort of obtained just for me in that sense, but it never worked from day one. I mean, it was problematic. There was something wrong with it, and we had to do I forget whether we sent it back, I guess, and got it fixed or something. We eventually got it working, but I don't understand at the time, I didn't know what the problem was, but I don't remember what the problem was. That's the thing. I don't understand exactly what was wrong with it, but we eventually got it working, I suppose. But it was such a long, drawn-out problem that we had with that piece of equipment. And, you know, I'll never forget that. At some point, I even, you know, I think I had to do something to get inside the electronics or something, but I was not, it was still on warranty probably, so I shouldn't have been doing that, but I actually opened up something to try and see if I could find out what was wrong with it and fix it. But I thought it was maybe just a connection was, or maybe I even isolated that there was a connection issue. I forget, but I tried to fix the problem without doing any soldering or anything, but I tried to fix it myself, and that was the wrong thing to do, according to some other people who became aware of that. But anyway, I mean, you know, for some reason, everything worked out okay in the end, as far as my thesis went. But I didn't make any incredible, great discoveries necessarily in my thesis. I learned a lot of things, and I made some progress in certain aspects of scientific study, I think. But anyway, I shared some of what I learned. I mean, I shared all of what I learned, but I mean, I shared possibly some useful things that I learned with other people that they could possibly benefit from in doing their research. But anyway, I've got two copies right here of my thesis, right? And I brought one up from the basement the other day because I have two copies of it, and I had one of them was in the basement, and I thought, well, that's no good. It's no good to keep it in the basement. You know, if we ever have a flood, a flood would destroy one of the copies. This is my thesis, my master's thesis. You know, but two copies. Sputtering, Rutherford Backscattering. It's got a long title. In-depth profiles for a 50 keV arsenic implant in silicon. That was my master's thesis. I gave it a long title because I wanted the title to indicate what it was about, you know, all the... I wanted the title to be useful to anyone who would be seeking for information on the aspects that were covered, on the different things that my thesis covered. I could have just called it, you know, an arsenic profile in silicon or something like that. I didn't have to call it by that long name, but I mean, I could not have called it just Rutherford backscattering, because it wasn't just about that. But Rutherford backscattering was one thing we used in doing the measurement. Rutherford backscattering is a very interesting thing. That's why I included it in the title. I believe it's using alpha particles and bouncing them off, if I recall. Bouncing them off your target, and because you can do more than one measurement with Rutherford backscattering, you can get specific directional information about what's coming back in terms of what energy it has, and also you can get the total backscatter, like how much comes back at different angles in sum total, rather than just this, you know, specific or more, rather than the more you know, narrow energy band of what you're looking for. Or I'm trying to think It's so this, you know, I just can't remember any of the details right now. But I remember that much about it that there was a there were a couple of things you could do with Rutherford backscattering. They were both useful, one of which was your total yield. How much came back was your total yield of the scattered particles, but the other but you can only look at one narrow angle. You couldn't you can't measure everything coming back. You're just measuring at one angle. How much comes back at a certain what basically Rutherford backscattering is coming straight back. It's scattering straight back. So you're looking at 10 degrees off axis or something. So it's you send something at the target. The alpha particle is at the target, comes back at 10 degrees off axis. So you're sending axis is here, your detector is right beside it. So when it's scattered back, you detect it here. It's called backscattering because it's scattered directly back. And only, I mean, only something of a certain type of target will be able to scatter that back, right? But I mean, so it's. But the nature of, because these alpha particles are quite large, it gives you a different, a very specific kind of information that you don't get by scattering other types of particles, like maybe protons or neutrons or whatever. Rutherford backscattering is a very, very specialized sort of study, field of study. Evidently, it was done by Rutherford. That's why we call it Rutherford backscattering. I think Rutherford did it on, he did it on, he I think it's used to detect heavy atoms, like because I believe Rutherford did it with gold. I think he did it with gold. He scattered from gold foil. So look, here's a tip for you on how to make your menu bar dark in OS Mac OS Monterey. You go into System Preferences, Accessibility, and then Display, Enable Reduce Transparency. That's what you select. You check mark beside Reduce Transparency, and your menu bar becomes black like mine is up here instead of white, which is much easier on the eyes if it's black. So that's how you do it right there. There's a little tip. But let's do a search now for Rutherford backscattering. Just to, let's test my knowledge to see how well I did without any without doing any research. Rutherford backscattering spectrometry, named after Rutherford. Alpha particles through metal foils. Yeah. They tried to measure the backscattering in an attempt to eliminate stray particles that they believed were caused by an imperfection in their alpha source. See, they thought there were these stray particles that were going from their alpha source in the wrong direction or something like that. But it was really probably something scattered back that was causing their stray particles. But they didn't know that, so they said, let's. They just wanted to measure the backscattering from a gold foil sample. And what happened was, let me just get the text a little bigger here. Well, that's no good because we can't read it. Hang on. According to the then dominant plum pudding model of the atom, in which the small negative electrons were embedded or spread through a diffuse positive region, that wouldn't scatter anything back, right? Because there's no concentrated positive region. But the protons and neutrons of the nucleus are concentrated very in a very small area, and that's why they were able to backscatter these alpha particles. And so Rutherford discovered using gold foil that these alpha particles could be scattered directly back, almost directly, because you put your detector almost in the same line beside where your particles are being your alpha particles beam is coming in. You've got an alpha particle beam coming in, and then you've got your detector right beside it, somewhere 10 degrees or 5 degrees different from it, and then somewhere, you know, nearby. And anywhere there near that axis will detect the backscatter. And with the plum pudding model, you couldn't get a backscatter. You could only get small deflections. because most of the alpha particles, or, you know, all of the alpha particles would just go unhindered through the foil, if that's what it was like. But the foil, this proved that a gold foil had concentrated positive charge in very concentrated spots, and that some of the alpha particles would hit one of those concentrated positive spots and bounce back, since the alpha particle is a positive particle also, with two protons and two neutrons. So it has a plus two charge, and the nuclei of the gold atoms had a very large positive charge, because gold's a heavy atom with a lot of protons. So it was bouncing back. The alpha particles were bouncing back from the gold nuclei. And Rutherford said here in this quote, "It was quite the most incredible event that has ever happened to me in my life. It was almost as incredible as if you fired a 15-inch shell at a piece of tissue paper and it came back and hit you." So this disproved the idea of the plum pudding model for the atom, and it proved the nuclear model, or eventually led to the idea of the nuclear model. So Rutherford backscattering was a very important step for science. And I used it in my experiment to detect the heavy atoms that were present in the silicon, which is a lighter material. Arsenic is a heavier material, so we could detect it using Rutherford backscattering. That's one of the things I did in my thesis, was I detected these things using Rutherford backscattering. It wasn't the only way I did it, but that was one way that we had of checking on the other work that we did, to strip away the layers and try to examine how much arsenic was left over after we stripped away layers using sputtering. And we were examining the depth profile of where the arsenic was in depth. This was my experiment, in the silicon, in the implanted silicon. Anyway, this is Ward Green. I think we should get on with our day now. I think we've had a long enough study, but the biggest news right now is the fact that I installed this Monterey on an external drive, and I was wrong about something. I was wrong in saying that it was difficult to do it. It was quite easy to do it. It just took a little while to download the many gigabyte size file that the Monterey file is. I need to copy this. I need to copy it because I downloaded it. Applications, install. Where is it? Oh yeah, it's in my other. It was on my Mac OS, my MacBook Pro. On my MacBook Pro, I downloaded it. Install Mac OS Monterey. It's 12 gigabytes. Let's make a backup copy of that on some of my external drives. I need to do that because I don't want to lose that file. That's 13 gigabytes. That I've downloaded. It's taking a long time. There we go. I want to just copy that file somewhere. I get it copied somewhere onto my external drives. It's taking forever. It's taking forever. This might be because I'm running off an external drive actually, but it's slowing everything down. It's in terms of, well, once the disks are on, it's the problem. No, it's just that the problem. It's just the problem is that the disks have gone to sleep on me because I wasn't using them. Once they're all back, look at that. That's 12 gigabytes. I already did back it up. Okay, I'd already backed it up yesterday apparently. Wait a minute. An older item already exists. Keep both. Because I had an older copy of this installation program. It shouldn't be an older copy. It should be the same age. Oh, wait. Oh, I tried to do it twice. Okay. That's a mistake. Let's cancel one of those. Right. Good. Trash that. So I just want to copy one of these. There it is. I'm making some copies of it, that's all. Because I can't afford to not have copies of all that huge file that I downloaded. So anyway, I'll copy it more thoroughly later, but I just wanted to make that copy before I forgot. So the big work I did was installing this to an external drive, and all you have to do is download it on your main drive, download it on your system. First of all, though, the problem I had was finding it. I had to find an article that was talking about how to install Monterey, and then click on the link in the App Store that it was pointing to. The link in App Store wasn't available when I searched the App Store. I couldn't find the installation file. I couldn't download the file to install Monterey from the App Store. I couldn't just search for it in the App Store and download it. So I had to find an article that talked about installing Monterey, and then click on the link in the article that took me to App Store, and then that was the way I could download. Then that link had the ability to download the OS Monterey. So I downloaded it, and once it was downloaded, I could click on it in Finder, you know, by starting it up. And they said to do it in Finder. I probably could have done it from applications because it was in the applications folder, but I did it in Finder. Now, maybe you have to do it in Finder, so I just followed what they said. I did it from Finder. I clicked on it. I opened it. And then I selected the drive I wanted to install it to, and it did all the formatting and erasing of that drive, and then it just did it in 1 hour it was supposed to take. It estimated 58 minutes at first, but then it was done. And let me see how long it actually took. It took it from 0241 to, yeah, it took less than an hour, from 0241 to 0332. It was saying select your country at that point. So it had finished the installation in less than an hour, which is 9 minutes less than an hour. It's 51 minutes instead of 58 minutes is how long it took. That's what I like about Mac OS installations. They always take less time than what they tell you, at least possibly because I have fast hard drives or SSDs. Usually they're fast, and that's why, maybe that's why, but because my drives, I'm tending to try to use the fastest SSDs that I can possibly afford. And that might be why I get good results when I'm using Mac OS. But Mac OS is, I've never had a failure or anything like that while I'm installing Mac OS. I've never had a failure. If I had a power outage, I don't know what would happen, but I imagine it would be able to resume the installation. There's the logic and the ability, the quality of, and it's the same with Linux, but Mac OS. The quality of Mac OS, the way it works, the security of it, is so good that it just, if anyone has ever installed Windows and had any difficulties installing Windows, of which I've had many, or with regard to which installations I've had many problems with Windows in the past, but I've never had a problem with a Mac OS installation, just for anyone who is interested. This is Ward Green. It's November 22nd, 2022. I hope you enjoyed it today, little children. And I hope it was, I hope I covered everything too, but I hope everyone enjoyed what they were watching today. This is Ward Green again. It's 18:37 hours, by the way, November 22nd. November 22nd, 11/22/2022, 18:37 hours. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. Bye for now. I love you.